The queen's courtiers, Jan and Olaf, sat across from each other, staring intently at the chessboard. They were obsessed with the game and would play late into the night, long after the rest of the castle had settled into bed. Working for the queen had been tumultuous at best, and chess brought them their only real escape. The chess pieces rattled on the board. The two froze at the sound of a loud thump against the floorboards. It was coming from the room next door, the room of Queen Johanna. There it was again. Jan and Olaf looked to the door, wondering what they should do. The queen had made it quite clear that she was never to be bothered at night, and since arriving from her homeland, she'd been nothing but nasty. They didn't want to cross her, but curiosity got the better of them. Jan and Olaf eased over to the door, careful not to make a sound. Jan pressed his ear to the door as Olaf peered through the keyhole. He couldn't see much, only the queen standing in the middle of the floor. She seemed to be talking to herself. They could just make out the words, "When I yawn a little, I am a nice little maiden. When I yawn half, I am half a troll. And when I yawn full, I am a troll altogether." Queen Johanna's body shook violently as she opened her mouth wide, and it kept opening, wider and wider, until her mouth was stretched over her whole head like a snake shedding its skin. A knotty green head emerged. Olaf's jaw dropped. The queen wasn't the queen at all. She wasn't even human. The horrifying creature shoved its way out of her mouth and threw off her skin. Queen Johanna was a troll witch. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Tales for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Tales in the search bar. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of The Witch in the Stone Boat features violence toward women and adult themes. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Today, we're diving into the Icelandic fairy tale, The Witch in the Stone Boat, about a good-hearted prince named Sigurd and the horrifying transformation that befalls his new queen. The Witch in the Stone Boat began as an oral folktale in Iceland. As far as we know, it was first written down in 1866 as part of Jan Arneson's Icelandic Legends, Volume 2, inspired by the works of the Brothers Grimm. Arneson wanted to create a collection of the Nordic folk stories that were popular throughout the island. Originally titled The Troll in the Stone Craft, it was later changed to The Witch in the Stone Boat by 19th-century Scottish writer and literary critic Andrew Lang. He operated during the late 1800s, as the British Empire's rapid expansion brought new lands and cultures under British rule. Following in his nation's footsteps, Andrew Lang decided to gather various folktales from around the world and present them to English readers. The first collection, published in 1889, was called The Blue Fairy Book. The book was released just before Christmas of that year and became a huge hit as a gift for children. Year after year, Lang would publish a new collection every Christmas, with each year bringing a new color. The best-known version of The Witch in the Stone Boat comes from the fourth book in the series, The Yellow Fairy Book, published in 1894. The story was wildly popular with Lang's Victorian audience, possibly because its narrative reflected themes that were at the forefront of their minds. It depicts peaceful cohabitation between two civilized kingdoms while warning of dangerous outsiders who don't follow the rules of society. But underneath the colonist overtones is a simpler story about a shallow prince who discovers that beauty is more than skin deep. Prince Sigurd paced around the castle, waiting for his father to return. Not that Sigurd minded being in charge. Theirs was a peaceful kingdom, nestled between the forest and a picturesque harbor. The sea provided everything his subjects could need. But Sigurd was always anxious with his father away. King Lars was growing old, and every time he would go off on a long journey, Sigurd worried that this would be his last. The king refused to rest, and this time he'd been gone much longer than expected. Sigurd feared that his father had taken a detour for his favorite hobby, trying to find a proper bride for the prince. Despite being a handsome and kind prince, Sigurd had few options when it came to marriage. Theirs was an isolated kingdom, and while his only expectation for his future bride was that she be beautiful, his father was impossible to please. Year after year, Sigurd would track down a princess of untold beauty, only for the king to turn the woman away. This frustrated Sigurd to no end. The king was half blind, after all. How could he know what to look for in a queen? The prince stopped in his tracks as trumpets sounded in the distance. The king's boat had returned to the harbor. Prince Sigurd rushed out of the castle and toward the shore, anxious to greet his father. As the small boat carrying the royal party approached, Sigurd couldn't believe his eyes. His father looked healthy and full of life. He was smiling from ear to ear. Sigurd didn't remember the last time he saw the king looking so happy, and that could only mean one thing.
"I've done it! I've found you a wife!"
shouted the king before the boat had even hit the land. Sigurd's stomach dropped. He'd been right after all. The king had been out bride hunting. The king's guards helped him out of the boat and onto dry land. Lars strode across the sand and wrapped his son up in a warm embrace.
"What does she look like?"
Sigurd asked as he pulled away from his father. King Lars didn't answer him. He waved the royal party past Sigurd and toward the castle.
"Men, pack the prince's things. He sets sail tomorrow."
Sigurd was stunned. Tomorrow? Sigurd followed his father into the castle, peppering him with questions. Where was he going? Who was he going to see? He was ready to be married, but this was all happening far too quickly. Lars smiled softly and waved his son over to his side. For the first time, Sigurd noticed his father's hand shaking. He stared at the king. The lines on his face were more pronounced, and there were deep bags under his eyes. His excitement had hidden the truth. The king was happy, but he certainly wasn't well. Even so, Lars's eyes twinkled as he spoke.
"My son, there is the most delightful princess on an island just to the south of here. She is generous, loving, smart, and yes, beautiful. I've spoken with both her and the king. They would like you to come at once."
Sigurd was about to protest, but his father continued,
"My son, I will not be here much longer. I need to know my kingdom is in good hands, and that you have a strong queen. Trust me."
Sigurd finally nodded. He still questioned his father's ability to judge beauty, but the king had never been so sure about a prospective queen before. This princess had to be special. Sigurd's ship rolled across the waves as the morning sun broke. It had been 3 days and nights on the water, and the prince was ready to be back on dry land. Most of all, he was ready to see this princess with his own eyes. The sailors all began to stir as the shout of, "Land ho!" rang from the crow's nest. Sigurd quickly dressed and ran to the top deck. The high mountain peaks of the island broke through the morning fog, They had made it. As the boat approached the shore, a welcome party was already out. He could see the royal robes of a king and a princess, but they were too far to make out their faces. Sigurd stepped off the boat and onto the rocky shore, and his eyes fell on the woman waiting for him. Without hesitation, he dropped to a knee and lowered his gaze, humbled by the breathtaking beauty standing in front of him. The woman spoke as she approached Sigurd.
"I am Princess Johanna. You don't seem nearly as fearsome as your father made you out to be."
Sigurd hesitantly raised his eyes toward the princess. She smiled back at him. In that moment, Sigurd wondered how he ever could have doubted his father. Sigurd and Johanna immediately fell for each other. Sigurd wasted no time asking her father for her hand in marriage. Much like Sigurd's father, King Magnus was old and sickly. He agreed to let the two marry, but on one condition, that Sigurd and Johanna stay with him on the island as long as they could. Sigurd knew his father was near the end, but he agreed. If this was what it took to win Johanna's hand in marriage, he would do it. Sigurd and Johanna were wed, and still their love continued to grow. While it was her beauty that first caught Sigurd's eye, he began to see new and wonderful qualities in his wife every day. She was thoughtful and generous to her people, quick-witted in conversation, and full of grace. After a year together, they were blessed with their own child, a son named Hans. One morning, Sigurd was sitting with Johanna and Hans, staring out over the sea, when a flag appeared on the horizon. It was the flag of his kingdom, and it was flying at half-mast. Sigurd's heart sank. He knew what that signaled. King Lars was dead. Coming up, Sigurd returns to his homeland with his new queen and encounters a sinister figure. Now, back to the story. After searching for a suitable wife for years, Prince Sigurd was overjoyed when his father discovered the kind and beautiful Princess Johanna. The two were wed, and Johanna soon gave birth to a beautiful baby boy named Hans. When King Lars died, Sigurd was called back to his homeland, where he would now reign as king. Johanna was overcome with emotion. She was heartbroken for her husband, and the prospect of governing a strange new land filled her with anxiety. As they sailed away, Johanna realized she had never left the island before. Now she had no idea when she would see it again. As they journeyed across the sea, Johanna busied herself by focusing on Hans. She spent all day doting over the young royal. Sigurd, too, was an involved parent. He sat with Johanna on the top deck and played with the baby for hours. It brought Johanna's heart joy, seeing Sigurd and Hans together. She knew how heartbroken her husband had been after the news of his father's death, and these moments with the child seemed to bring him peace. After 2 days at sea, the strong breeze that had been carrying them across the water completely died. They knew they were only a day away from the kingdom, but without the wind, they wouldn't be able to make the last leg of the journey. As a thick fog moved in, there was nothing to do but wait. The day turned to night, and one by one, the crew made their way below deck. Johanna and Sigurd stayed above, talking to each other and playing with Hans. Johanna was so grateful to have Sigurd in her life and had not forgotten the great sacrifice he made to be with her on the island for the last year. As they waited for the wind to pick up, her anxiety began to melt away. Sigurd and Hans were her family now, and all she needed was them by her side. Even here, surrounded by this dense fog, she was home. Sigurd let out a mighty yawn. He had barely slept since learning of his father's passing, and the exhaustion was showing on his face. Johanna encouraged him to go below and get some rest. She would stay up and look after Hans until he went to sleep.
Sigurd thanked his wife and went below. Johanna walked the baby around the deck of the boat, trying her best to get him to rest, but he didn't want to go down. As she made another trip around the boat, something off in the distance caught her eye. She peered through the dark fog, trying to identify the object. Whatever it was coming closer. Hans began to cry. Johanna rocked him as she peered out over the railing. Suddenly, the approaching object broke through the fog, and a chill shot down Johanna's spine. It was a boat made entirely of stone. The fact that it was floating made no sense. There were no rowers, no wind, and yet it was moving directly toward Johanna's ship. Johanna tried to scream, but her voice froze in her throat. She couldn't speak. She couldn't move. It was like she was frozen. The stone boat was right on top of her, and standing at the bow was a hideous, otherworldly creature with jagged teeth, red eyes, and a disfigured green face. It was a troll witch. The stone boat tapped against the sails of Johanna's, and the witch floated down onto the deck. Johanna still couldn't move, like she was trapped in a terrible nightmare. All she could do was watch as the hideous troll strode over and snatched the baby from her arms. Then, without saying a word, the troll witch began to undress Johanna. When Johanna was down to nothing but her white undergarments, the witch dressed in the queen's regal clothes. Before Johanna's eyes, the witch began to change. Her skin bubbled and tightened, her nose shrunk, and her ears grew. Within seconds, she had changed from the hideous troll into an exact replica of Johanna herself. The witch smiled at Johanna and gestured toward the stone boat. Johanna's feet lifted off the ground. She floated up and away from the deck and onto the other vessel. The troll witch finally spoke for the first time.
"This spell I lay upon you, that you slacken not your course until you come to my brother in the underworld."
Tears streamed down Johanna's frozen cheeks as the stone vessel sailed away from her husband's ship. She watched the imposter rock the crying baby. Hans wasn't fooled by the witch's disguise. He wailed louder and louder, demanding his true mother. It was the last thing Johanna saw before she disappeared into the fog. Below deck, Sigurd awoke with a start. His wife, Johanna, was standing over him, but her beautiful face was twisted into a mask of fury, and she was shouting at him at the top of her lungs. It took Sigurd a moment to realize what was happening. His wife was chastising him for leaving her and the baby alone on deck. There were no servants around, no crew. Anything could have happened to them. Sigurd had never seen this side of Johanna before. He was surprised that she was upset over being left alone. She normally prized her independence and frequently rejected help. But despite her upsetting disposition, Sigurd agreed with her. It had been wrong of him to leave her all alone.
"I'm so sorry," he stammered. "Let me take the baby from you. Why don't you get some sleep, my love?"
Without waiting, Johanna dropped the wailing baby in her husband's arms.
"Wake the crew while you're at it," she snapped. "There's a strong wind blowing and we shouldn't waste it."
Sigurd scrambled to do as he was told. Soon, the crew made their way to the top deck, raising the sails. The strong wind shot them off in the direction of the King's Harbor. Sigurd was still trying to make sense of the scene. He couldn't understand why Johanna had become so agitated, and Hans wouldn't stop crying. Sigurd rocked his son until the morning light broke, but the baby was inconsolable. The boat pulled into the harbor by the afternoon. Sigurd was overcome with emotion at the sight of the entire kingdom awaiting his arrival. They'd been in mourning since King Lars passed. Johanna escorted Sigurd off the boat and wasted no time getting down to the business of ordering around her subjects. She was rude and haughty, not at all like the woman that Sigurd was used to.
"Sigurd, assign some of these peasants to grab my things," she snapped. "And direct me to my chambers. I want nothing more to do with these people."
Johanna marched off toward the castle, leaving the king alone with Hans. As they settled into the castle, Sigurd couldn't help but wonder if becoming queen had changed his wife. Her beauty mattered very little to him now that she was being so disrespectful to his court. While once she'd been inseparable from Prince Hans, now she all but ignored the child. When she did hold him, he would cry even louder than before. As much as Sigurd wanted to focus on his new family, he was soon beset with the responsibilities of ruling. He assigned two courtiers to wait on Johanna and hired a nurse named Clara to help take care of Hans. Amazingly, when Clara held Hans, he quieted for the first time since leaving the ship. The two courtiers were clearly a bit overwhelmed in their new positions, but Johanna seemed to at least be appeased for the time being. Sigurd knew something must have been wrong with his wife. Her personality had taken such a shift over the last few days. He didn't want to believe that the last year of his life had been a lie. But doubt began to creep into his mind. Was it possible that his father had been mistaken about Johanna? Had she fooled them both? It was an unsettling thought, and one that Sigurd couldn't allow himself to believe. There had to be another explanation for her recent behavior, but back in his homeland for the first time in over a year, he had to push that distraction out of his mind and focus on being king. Meanwhile, the two courtiers, Jan and Olaf, were busy fulfilling Queen Johanna's every whim. She had them assigned to quarters in her own distant wing of the castle so that she could bark orders at them all day long. When evening came and the queen retired to her chambers, they were all too happy to stay out of her way. One night, they were huddled next to the fireplace, playing a game of chess, when they heard a loud thump from the queen's chambers. They both shot straight up from their seats and crept to the door. Jan couldn't see the queen, but could hear her whispering, "When I yawn a little, I am a nice little maiden. When I yawn half, I am half a troll. And when I yawn full, I am a troll altogether." Olaf, with his eye pressed over the keyhole, saw everything. Johanna began to shed her skin. The queen wasn't a woman at all. She was a troll witch. The witch stepped out of the skin suit. She bent down and lifted up the floor. It was a trap door.
"Brother!"
the witch called out. Up from the depth stepped a three-headed giant, every bit as repulsive and twice the size of his sister. He wore a metal belt around his waist with a chain attached to the center that led down through the trap door. He carried a trough of raw meat in his arms.
"What do you see?" asked Jan.
He could only hear the commotion, but Olaf was too stunned to speak. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. He was certain he had gone mad. The giant put the trough down in front of the witch. Without hesitating, she dove in head first. Bits of flesh and sinew flew about the room as she ate her way through the contents of the trough. Within moments, she had devoured every last bite. The witch finally lifted her head up, satisfied.
"Thank you, brother."
The giant nodded, took the trough, and disappeared back into the depths below the castle. The witch closed the trap door and stepped back into the Johanna skin. Just as quickly as she had transformed into the beastly troll, she was once again the beautiful queen. Olaf was shaking with fright. Jan had never seen his friend so scared. He asked, "What did you see?" But Olaf was so traumatized that he could not speak. Jan, having been spared the horrific vision, had no idea what had gone on in the queen's chambers. He only knew that his friend would never be the same. On the other side of the castle, the nurse, Clara, rocked Prince Hans to sleep. She had finally gotten him to quiet down when she heard the floorboard crack on the other side of the room.
"Who's there?"
Clara called out. Clara leaned forward and strained her eyes, looking into the darkness on the other side of the room. Her jaw dropped. A beautiful woman emerged from the floor, dressed in white, with a chain tied around her waist. She was walking straight for Clara and reaching for the baby. Coming up, King Sigurd confronts the ghostly woman in white. Now, back to the story. After returning to his kingdom, Sigurd was shocked to find the change in attitude from his wife, Queen Johanna. While her courtier discovered her true identity as a ghastly troll witch, Clara the nurse was experiencing her own supernatural event. A woman in white emerged from the floorboards in the corner of her room. Clara had no idea where this ghostly figure had come from. She stepped back, clutching Hans closer to her. But the moment he saw the woman in white, he stopped crying. Then, to Clara's amazement, he reached out a tiny hand for her. The woman delicately scooped the child out of the nurse's arms. Clara wanted to protest, but something in the woman's kind eyes and warm smile made her certain that she would not hurt the little prince. Hans didn't make a noise and didn't fight. For the first time in days, the baby seemed at peace. The woman held Hans to her breast and nursed the child in the darkness as Clara looked on. The chain around the waist of the woman jerked, and her face filled with sadness. She kissed the baby on the head and handed him back to Clara. Then she turned and walked back to the corner of the room, disappearing through the hole in the floorboards once more. The surreal scene left the nurse stunned. She couldn't explain what had happened and had no idea who the woman was or why she had appeared. Clara wondered if she should report what she had seen to the king. She was certain that he would think she was crazy. She wasn't even sure she believed it herself. By the next night, Clara had put the woman in white behind her. It must have been a dream, the nurse thought, as she rocked Hans next to the fire. The floorboards on the far side of the room cracked and popped, just as they had the night before. Clara's eyes widened as once again, the woman in white emerged from the floor, dragging the chain behind her. Clara held out Hans, and just as before, the woman soothed the baby and nursed him until the tug on the chain came. The woman handed the baby back to the nurse, whispering,
"Two are gone, and only one is left."
The woman in white disappeared into the floor as Clara rolled the words around in her head. "Two are gone, and only one is left." She racked her brain trying to figure out what the ghost meant by the phrase. She's appeared the last two nights. Two are gone. Clara's mind sparked to life as she laid the sleeping baby down in his crib. The nurse knew exactly what the ghost was saying. She would return one more time. With the promise of the third trip from the ghost, Clara knew she had to take this news to King Sigurd. The next morning, she stood before him, head bowed in embarrassment for what she was about to say.
"My king, please believe me when I tell you this. A ghost has visited your child the last two nights. I believe she will come back for a third."
King Sigurd stared at her for a long moment. Clara was certain that he thought her insane. No doubt he would have her expelled from the palace. But when he finally spoke, his voice was soft and full of concern. Does the ghost mean the prince harm? Clara shook her head. The king nodded.
You did the right thing in telling me, but I must see this apparition myself.
That night, King Sigurd sat next to Clara as she held Hans, his hand resting on the hilt of the sword. Despite what Clara had said earlier, Sigurd wasn't going to take the risk. The floorboards cracked in the dark, and Sigurd looked to the nurse. Her whole body tightened. She nodded to her king. This was it. Sigurd stood, readying his sword. In the darkness, he saw the outline of a white dress as it emerged from the floor. His heart raced as he lifted the sword and stepped forward. Sigurd gasped as the woman in white stepped out of the shadows. It wasn't a ghost. It was Johanna, the real Johanna. With one look in her eyes, he knew instantly that the woman who had been parading about the castle and issuing orders to his attendants was an imposter. Sigurd stared at the vision of warmth and beauty that was his true bride and whispered, "My love." Johanna tried to step toward her husband, but she froze suddenly. The chain around her waist tightened, pulling her back toward the hole in the floorboards. Johanna's face paled. Sigurd sprung into action, leaping toward his wife. He swung the sword at the chain around her waist and cut it in half. The chain flew down the hole. There was a distant scream from far below. The ground underneath them shook, rattling the entire castle. Sigurd and Johanna rushed into each other's arms.
"Where have you been?"
Sigurd whispered to his queen. Johanna reached up and kissed her husband. Finally, she pulled back and looked into his eyes.
"A troll witch stole my form that night at sea. She kidnapped me and sent me away to her brother."
Johanna looked to the hole in the floorboards. The king and queen walked over and looked down, deep into the ground. At the bottom of a deep shaft lay the three-headed giant. The chain was still tied around his waist. Johanna and Sigurd could see that he was clearly dead.
"That giant is the witch's brother," Johanna told Sigurd. "He lived in a cave underneath your castle. She sent me to him to be his wife while she stole my life. He locked me up, beat me. I finally told him I would marry him if he just let me see my baby. He tied this chain around me and said I would have 3 nights. He followed me up this shaft to make sure I didn't try to run away. He must have fallen to his death when you cut the chain. You freed me."
Johanna's head turned at the sound of Hans awake. She rushed over and held her baby close to her chest. She was finally home. Sigurd's elation at the reunion quickly ended as he filled with rage. He grabbed his sword and marched across his castle. King Sigurd entered the courtiers' chambers, sword drawn. He marched right past them and threw open the queen's doors. The queen sat up in bed and snarled,
"How dare you interrupt my slumber?"
Without hesitating, Sigurd threw a sack over the witch's head. He bound her feet while she fought and screamed for her brother, the giant. The courtiers looked on in astonishment as the king stalked back out of the queen's room with the struggling sack over his shoulder. King Sigurd carried the impostor through the castle and out into the courtyard. As the guards and courtiers looked on, he raised the sword high, then swung it down onto the struggling sack. He split the troll witch's head in two, killing her with a single blow. Sigurd hoisted the bloody sack and handed it to Jan, instructing the courtier to feed her to the wild horses. Jan couldn't help himself and peeked in the sack to see the gnarled, bloody head of the troll witch. Finally, Olaf's terror made sense. Johanna was restored to her place on the throne, and the mood around the castle instantly changed. This queen was all the wonderful things the court had heard. For her bravery and honesty, Nurse Clara was rewarded with money and land and a spot in the court. Olaf never recovered from his madness, permanently broken by what he saw that night. King Sigurd and Queen Johanna's Harbor Kingdom thrived under their rule. Sigurd's father had been right all along. It took more than beauty to make a great queen, and there was none more graceful and merciful than Johanna. While The Witch in the Stone Boat might be a centuries-old Icelandic folktale, it reached the height of its popularity in England during the late 1800s. Hearing it today, it's easy to see why it might have struck a chord with a Victorian English audience at the height of colonization. In the story, the protagonist, Sigurd, encounters two female figures from distant lands. First is the Princess Johanna, the woman he eventually marries. As in many fairy tales from this period, The Witch in the Stone Boat describes her in terms that signal to the Victorian audience that she will make a good wife. Most notably, she's beautiful and agreeable. When her imposter becomes irritable and bossy, it's a clear sign that there's something sinister afoot. But the troll witch and her brother, the three-headed giant, are outsiders of another sort. They're brutal, animalistic savages who do not conform to the behavior of proper society, and as a result, their horrific deaths are justified. This mirrors the attitudes promoted by the Victorian British Empire, which justified conquering foreign nations by depicting their inhabitants as savage brutes. This sentiment is reflected in the preface to the 1866 English translation, where the editors wrote, "When judging of things that come from strange quarters, the audience should consider the circumstances and sentiments which gave birth to the subject, and then pass their verdict of appropriation or displeasure." In other words, when dealing with foreign cultures and people, adopt that which reflects one's own values and leave the rest behind. But The Witch in the Stone Boat isn't just a reflection of colonial attitudes. At the story's heart, there's a lovely sentiment, one that remains true whether you're in frigid Iceland or sunny California. Beauty means very little if you lack good character. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back Wednesday with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Tales, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Tales on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Carrie Murphy, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Isabella Way. This episode of Tales was written by Jesse Harris, with writing assistance by Greg Castro. I'm Vanessa Richardson.